Well, good morning to you one and all. It's Sunday, January 7th, 2018, and we welcome you to our Sunday morning roundtable discussion. It's 6 degrees in Plainfield, and we're all here nice and cozy in our church, Plainfield Christian Science Church Independent, Plainfield, New Jersey, the United States of America. Our subject this morning is God, and today Florence will lead us in our morning prayer.
Oh my God, I offer as a consecrated gift upon thine altar a heart dedicated to thy service, lips speaking only words of charity, love, and truth, thoughts striving to be only the true thoughts of the mind of God. Help me to endure unto the end, strong in the faith, powerful in the truth, all the influence that I can bring to bear, all the force of tongue or pen that is mine, I offer in thy service. May heaven help, consecrate, and accept.
Thank you. And then miscellaneous writings. We today in this classroom are enough to convert the world if we are of one mind, for then the whole world will feel the influence of this mind, as when the earth was without form, and mind spake, and form appeared. Would anyone like to volunteer to read next week?
I will.
And who is that? Day-Day. Day-Day. Okay, thank you, Day-Day. All right, our golden text this morning, our subject is God, the golden text, John 4. God is a spirit, and they that worship him must worship him in spirit and in truth. I'd like to take a moment, Linda, you could read the watching point. I caught you. Nope. Number one.
Watch lest you attempt to do anything in Christian Science from any standpoint except that of joy. Our leader's hymn admonishes us to follow and rejoice all the rugged way. Work in Christian Science that is done joyously has a power and effectiveness that work done as a solemn duty never has. If you seem to have lost your joy, obey Mrs. Eddy's command, quote, if your joy is lost, handle animal magnetism, end quote. If this is properly done, your joy will return, and you can again take up your work. Our leader once wrote to George Kinter, quote, gladness and rejoicing are divine in essence, and their reward is manifold in its effect, end quote.
Thank you. We talked a little bit yesterday at our Bible study, thank you, Tom, about handling animal magnetism. And who can tell me how you do that?
Well, for me, the most important was to question the thoughts that are coming and ask, are they bringing me closer to God or farther away and working for him or taking me away from working from him?
Thank
yeah,
you.
The first step is to detect it.
Yeah.
And then realize it's an imposter. If it is not from God, and then don't accept it. And that includes feeling depressed. You don't just wake up in the morning feeling depressed. It's a process you've been entertaining. Oh, it's so cold out, and oh, it's this, and Christmas is over, boo-hoo-hoo. You know, all my friends have gone home, boo-hoo-hoo. whatever. So you think those for a while, and then pretty soon you're pretty miserable. So that's why this watching point is so important. It's number one for a reason. Keep your joy. No matter what. No matter what is going on, keep your joy. And that's not giddy happiness. That's a deep-rooted sense, as we talked about yesterday, living by faith. When you're living by faith and you know no matter what, God is in control, you can keep your joy.
And the destruction, the elimination of evil or animal magnetism is because of the allness of God. If you feel God's presence all around you, if you are conscious of his allness, it's going to be really hard to be unhappy or depressed. God doesn't bring that state of thought. And if you're conscious of God's allness, well, your mind's so full of what's right that it's hard for the wrong to sneak in.
Yes.
And that's why she says, hold thoughts steadfastly to the enduring, the good, and the true. And you will detect animal magnetism and you will handle it. And you'll do it joyfully.
I think this is so beautiful because really I never thought of it. I used to indulge in sadness and justifying it with all kinds of reasons, but to think that, as it says in the watching point, gladness and rejoicing are divine in essence, meaning if I indulge in it, I'm separating myself from God. I never looked at it that way. I didn't used to anyway.
Thank you.
Yeah, and that's why, for someone who knows better, it's a sin to indulge in depression or self-pity, or whatever. I mean, those thoughts come to us, but to indulge them when you know better as Florence said, it's a sin against God because you're separating yourself from God.
And that gets to our lesson, which is when you do that, you're disobeying the first commandment. You are having another God before the one God. And you are focusing on the trouble and not on God, God's omnipotence. Which leads us in citation 13. I guess Suzanne and Michael commented on, and here it is. Denial of the claims of matter is a great step toward the joys of spirit. Joys of spirit. Towards human freedom and the final triumph over the body. For Suzanne and...
Yeah,
Suzanne, you want to comment first on that?
Sure. When I heard that, followed by thou shalt have no other gods before me, it just was so obvious that all these things clamoring for our attention, whether it be a feeling, an odd feeling in the body, or a negative thought that keeps pushing, there are these gods that are other gods clamoring for our attention, and the more attention we give to them, well, they are other gods. And so it was just so clear the way the lesson followed that those are the other gods that we are to push away and say, nope, there is only one God, and I'm going to keep my focus on the one God.
Thank you. Michael?
The last passage, number 14, where she emphasizes the depth of the first commandment, is really the final word on what we're talking about. And she just, I don't know if other Christian denominations emphasize it so much, but really it's everything in that one first commandment. And I think it's very easy to kind of brush over it, but the application of it to everything in our lives is so important. And that's what I mentioned. One thing that a friend of mine had mentioned about Paul Stark Seeley was this teacher, and a really respected teacher, was that he mentioned this about hating or disliking someone, and how that, if you're consumed with that, it's no different than worshiping that person. And I think Mrs. Eddy talks also about, she writes about how human love and hate are very almost identical. The human version of love is almost like control and very willful and very very much, I guess, I think Eustace talks about fattening the lamb for dinner or something, and sort of the same idea that you are worshiping a false god. It's idolatry, and how when we are consumed with the problem, it's the same idea that we are not acknowledging God, and something else is taking center stage in our thought and in our heart, really. And so this need to turn your attention to the right, in the right way, is something that always needs to be, you know, kept in mind.
Thank you. You know, it's interesting because in that citation 14, she says the first commandment is what to her?
Favorite.
That's something to think about. This is Eddie's favorite text. And then she says it demonstrates Christian Science. And just as what was explained, it's why. If you were always to just always go back to that, any problem you have, ask yourself, how am I having another God before the one God? How am I believing in error and thinking it's real? Always take yourself back. It will clear your vision and put you on the right path. Bruce, you can read that statement.
Thou shalt have no other gods before me, Exodus 23. The first commandment is my favorite text. It demonstrates Christian Science. It inculcates the triunity of God, Spirit, Mind. It signifies that man shall have no other spirit or mind but God, eternal good, and that all men shall have one mind. The divine principle of the first commandment bases the science of being, by which man demonstrates health, holiness, and life eternal. One infinite God good unifies men and nations, constitutes the brotherhood of man, ends wars, fulfills the scripture, love thy neighbor as thyself, annihilates pagan and Christian idolatry, whatever is wrong in social, civil, criminal, political, and religious codes, equalizes the sexes, annuls the curse on man, and leaves nothing that can sin, suffer, be punished, or destroyed.
Thank you. So what does it not do? It does everything. I think if we all work with it more in our own lives, it will have a tremendous effect on all things.
It doesn't enable error or evil.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel sorry for evil or error.
And I think it was Eustace. It wasn't one of the Love is the Liberator writings, but it said, I think Eustace said, have one God and have one mind, and you have solved every problem.
Yeah. And the trick is to do it, and we'll talk about that more too. But before we move on, what does it mean to inculcate?
To instill?
Yes. Thank you. To drive or force on, to teach and enforce by repetition. That's what we do here.
I thought of Springfield when I saw that.
Yeah. And it's why we do it every week. Sometimes you can liken yourself to a helium balloon. You get all blown up and thinking all these good thoughts, and then through the harsh noises of the day during the week, you can kind of, your balloon deflates. And this is what you have to realize within yourself day by day, to keep your balloon filled up, keep yourself full of truth and barren of error, just as Gary said. What's the curse on man?
To till the soil?
Yes.
It says that man is a sinner.
Yes.
The claim.
Mm-hmm.
That you are born into matter.
Thank you. Born into matter, and you're going to die out of it. Tilling the soil, that women will bring forth children in sorrow.
That man is separate from God.
Yes.
Well, the human woes and the, quote, human condition.
Yeah, all that's involved in the human condition. That's the Adam dream. And that would seem to be the curse. But, you know, we don't have to live in the Adam dream. We can have heaven on earth. But it requires discipline of thought.
Active in truth.
Go ahead, Florence.
As if we are active in truth, we'll be awake, not to indulge in it.
Yes, yes, right. Active in the truth. You can't get lazy and sloppy and go to sleep. Anyone else on that beautiful statement? You can think more about it. It demonstrates, what do you need? Health? This first commandment will help you demonstrate health. Need holiness? You need eternal life?
Need to get along with your neighbors?
Want to see the end of wars? All the things we complain about. The answer's here. Okay, Carol, you read citation 11, please.
The Father in secret is unseen to the physical senses, but he knows all things and rewards according to motives, not according to speech. To enter into the heart of prayer, the door of the erring senses must be closed, lips must be mute, and materialism silent, that man may have audience with spirit, the divine principle, love, which destroys all error.
Thank you. Okay, we had Linda and Florence commented on that. Linda, do you want to say anything?
Well, I don't know if I could add. What you added and Florence added helped me understand it even more, that it's about prayer. But with me, the way I move around so fast, the idea of being still, I realize I have to quiet things if I want to hear God. And it made it more important to me. And I loved the lessons that we've had that kind of just went together, and the music and everything. It still awes me how this stuff comes together and brings home the message.
Yeah, you mentioned you had a beautiful healing in church,
yes.
Listening to the music.
Yes.
Being
the message
quiet.
Being be still.
Mm-hmm, be still. You know, I had read recently, and I think this is a very important point. Jesus never rushed, did he? Did he ever tell his disciples, come on, get you're too slow.
Walking too slow.
No.
He waited for Lazarus, too.
He waited 3 days. He never rushed. Rushing is animal magnetism. And I've gotten to a point now where I find it offensive. Where are you rushing to? You're not. You're showing that you're in the human mind. You might think you're, well, Mrs. Eddy says, rushing around smartly is not proof of what?
Of accomplishing.
Of accomplishing.
Yes. Maybe you think you're looking busy and accomplished, but you're not. You have a big flag over your head saying, I'm in the human mind, everybody get out of my way.
I think there's tremendous fear underneath all that when all that rushing goes on.
Yeah,
insecure.
There is.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, it's like the idea that life is short, which is, you know, a very common thing that people say. Life is short, and we got to rush. Don't have time for everything.
Right. Got to party while you can.
Well, you know, and don't you appreciate someone who is poised and who's not rushing?
Yes.
Have you ever gone into a kitchen on Thanksgiving Day? And you know, there'll be someone rushing around madly, I gotta get this. and just makes you feel like, holy Moses, maybe I shouldn't have come over today. Or someone who is poised and going around doing quietly what needs to be done. I mean, I can give you many examples of this, but rushing is animal magnetism. Pressure is animal magnetism. If you ever feel pressured, you stop. And don't do a thing till you get your peace back. As we have quoted, what is the only time Mrs. Eddy mentions pressure in science and health?
To come out from the material world and be separate.
That's right. So if you are feeling pressured, maybe that is your need. You need to come out of the material world. Maybe you need to say no to a few people. Maybe you need not to be rushing around in the material world. That's the problem. You're doing too much human do-goody stuff and not enough in line with your father. I love the fact Jesus never rushed. And who did he praise, Martha or Mary?
Mary.
Mary. Mary. Was Mary rushing around in the kitchen making gravy?
No, sitting at his feet listening.
Yes. Never rush. I remember a while ago, I was outside and the phone rang and I rushed to get it because, oh, my phone's ringing, someone needs help, and I fell. And I will never rush to answer a phone, to do anything. It's the peace and the poise of God. Who is speaking?
Yeah, this is kind of a universal problem now. Of everyone rushing around trying to get all their things done. And it is a way for us to keep so busy that we don't have time to focus on God and what's important.
Yes.
It's very subtle. There's one more thing I got to do, and it never stops. You just can never catch up unless you say, okay, I am going to stop all this rushing around. And, get things back, prioritized correctly with God first, and then everything else falls into place.
Thank you.
I know I've experienced that, too. Many times I thought, well, if I'll just take care of this thing, everything will be in line. Sure enough, once that's done, and there's two more demands after that that I didn't see beforehand, and it's a bottomless pit, like Suzanne was saying,
unless you
put an end to it.
Thank you. It's a bottomless pit. That's how error works. There'll be no end to it. And this, I'm bringing this out because it applies directly to this statement, citation 11, which I love. To enter into the heart of prayer, what do you have to do?
Quiet.
Yes, the door of erring senses must be closed. Lips must be mute and materialism silenced. Unless you learn how to pray correctly, watch correctly, you can't have this sense of oneness with the Father. You can't even begin to think about Him being the first commandment because your mind is racing in 60 directions. We've all experienced this, including myself.
Does anybody know anyone who habitually keeps their television on all the time or keeps the radio on all the time. They have to have background.
My grandmother used to do that. It drove me nuts.
Yeah, I mean, I have good friends who they have to have a background noise on all the time. And are they demonstrating? Are they listening to God? Really? I mean, I used to listen to the radio when I drove in my car. I used to listen to good music and stuff. And after a while, I realized it became offensive to me because it was such a distraction from being able to listen to what God wanted me to do.
It's a form of hypnosis.
Yes, it is.
Exactly.
And you will find, too, you sit down to pray, even if you have everything turned off, all the stuff you've been listening to all day is going to come back to you. Oh, yeah, what happened on that news show and all this and that? And you've got to shut it down and shut it out. That's the materialism.
It's like a vain way of trying to fill a void. Because, you know, there's this thing called ignorance that sometimes people think is innocent, but it's not. It's ignoring God. Mm. And if you put in this other as a substitute, how can you listen to God if this buzz is going in the back of your mind all the time? You're ignoring God because God is talking to each and every one of us. You're throwing this other thing in there as a substitute.
Thank you.
Can't be substituted.
Cannot be substituted. Yep, you're looking to fill this void in ways that aren't good. You know, and you can see it too in restaurants. I don't know why in restaurants, when you're supposedly sitting and wanting to talk to other people, they have music blaring. And I always ask them to turn it down. And I only go to restaurants who are very gracious and say, absolutely, I will. If they look at me like, are you kidding me? Then they won't see me again. Or you go and they have 6 TVs on. The football game must be watched at all costs. You have to know what your favorite team is doing. And my point is, and I know this because it has happened to me, and if I'm not careful, it happens again. Then at night when you're trying to be quiet, your thought is racing with all these stuff. It's hard to turn it off. In order to pray, you have to be quiet, and you have to have the discipline to do this and do it often. And as I guess what Michael was just saying, it's beginning to be a lost art. Even, you know, you go out and people have these plugs in their ears all the time. Don't let it be a lost art to you. You can think with God, and you should be. So, remember this. And if you're having trouble doing it, then the only way to learn to do it is to practice it more and more and incorporate it in your life. Shut out the material senses. When Jesus prayed, what did he do?
Up to the mountain by himself.
Yes, which is another thing. Prayer requires solitude. And you, now, if you had to and you were in a room or any place, on a train or something, you could certainly pray amongst people if you needed to. But generally speaking, when you pray, you shouldn't be, you know, surrounded with other people that are chatting or whatever. You have to take some seclusion. Turn the phone off. I heard people complain their phone is ringing all the time. Well, take it off the hook. Who says you have to be on the phone all the time? And especially now with cell phones and everything, people are on the phone all the time.
Yes. I saw somebody, sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was one time on my way to church, somebody was actually crossing the street while texting and almost got hit by several cars because they didn't realize they walked into a busy street. And, I mean, it's just, like I just mentioned, a form of hypnosis.
Thank you, it is.
Yeah.
You know, Mrs. Evans was very anti-computers, and one of her reasons, and this was a while ago, was because she felt it was a big mesmeric machine that people just stared at and became mesmerized. And this is another thing where it's endless. You know, you look up one thing and then you got to look up something else and you look up something else. You're just constantly on the computer. It's very, very mesmeric unless you have a mastery over it. True of TV, music, other things. So,
and those things that you mentioned are designed that way. It's not coincidence that they even call it clickbait. Like, it's baiting you to go to the next thing and the next and the next. And that's how people end up, you know, hours and hours on things like social media.
Yes. What was I reading? And I wanted to bring it, and I didn't, but it was something that, oh, I know. It was someone who had worked for Facebook. Maybe you saw this in the news. He'd worked for Facebook, and he no longer works for Facebook. But he said it was intentionally formed to keep you hooked on it. It was intentionally done.
Yeah.
And we know that all the ads, that you have to have certain things, that you can't live without certain things, it's intentionally done to mesmerize you into believing it. So, anyway, let your prayer time be in solitude, in quietness, and in confidence shall be what?
Strength,
thank you.
I would just like to mention, for me, when I pray in solitude, it gives me, I feel like I'm filling up the well, and it gives me strength, and it kind of spills out. So for me, it's like to pray through the day without ceasing, and when these impositions come to me, or you know, something's, you know, like buzzing around in my head, I find it's a little easier to shut it out when I've had this, you know, time alone to pray.
Absolutely.
That's how it's supposed to work.
And as you do it, then, and you have this time of seclusion and solitude, then you can do it much more easily during the day. And our goal is pray without ceasing all the time.
Yes. And if I'm, like, wiping the floor, washing the floor, or just doing mundane tasks, I feel really close to God. And, you know, I can go about my day joyously, and it's a lot easier to keep praying.
You're right.
It's the kind of thinking you're doing. That's why you feel that closeness.
Yes. Just be conscious of the present and of your thinking. What are you thinking? Be in the present. That's why that's such an important thought. Because if you're not in the present, you're either mulling over the past or worrying about the future. Think about now. Is God with you now? Are you tuned into Him now? Are you aware of everyone around you? Are you aware of what's happening? Tune in. You should say tune in to the channel G-O-D. Well, and the other...
Also, it's to recognize that everything that we're doing is of and through and to God. I remember reading that a worker in Mrs. Eddy's home at one time complained because didn't feel like they wanted to do all this material work. And Mrs. Eddy said something like, "I didn't know there was any material work."
Thank you. That's very right. Very true. And that annuls the sense, too, that, well, you know, I'm going to be doing church work now or something like that, and later I'll be going to my office. No, there's no such thing. It's all working for God. It should be. Thank you. I love that story.
I like Citation 12, too, where it says, "Spirit of God is heard when the senses are silent."
Yes.
I've been working with that lately, and it gives me help.
Thank you. And then, also, along with this praying, the solitude, the stillness, shutting out the senses, and then making it a priority. I don't know how many of you, you know, you have to go to work or do whatever you have to do, and you spend 10 minutes racing through the lesson. That's not really making it a priority, is it? The other thing, you know, I've heard people do is they read the lesson with their spouses or, you know, something. It shouldn't be a group thing in the morning. You read it. It's you and God, not you and wife, cousin, and child. It's you and God. And this is how we get to know God better. This is how we grow in science, these times. Some of it is spent in reading. Some of it is spent in just praying. You know, there's another story. Mrs. Eddy said one of her students said they had Science and Health by their bedside. And she told them to take it away. You know, there should be more time spent in just communing with the Father than just reading. Reading is good. I'm not knocking the reading. Obviously, it's good. But Mrs. Eddy was making a point.
Don't make a God out of the book. Don't make it a crutch.
Yeah, where that's you're just sitting in your, as we talked about, your prayer chair and reading all the time. Got to be communing with God, getting His inspiration, taking the divinity course fresh from God to you. The reading is highly important, though. So after all that is done, she says, you can have what?
Reward?
No, before then. That man may have your... Pardon me?
Audience.
Yes.
Audience. Yes.
That's what I love so much. When I first read that, I said, my gosh, I'm in the throne of grace here. I'm in the presence of Almighty God. Okay, who can tell me anything that's better than that? I'd like to hear you say. Tell me.
That's nothing.
No. How much is this going to cost you?
It costs nothing.
It costs nothing. And yet it is the pearl of great price. All that it costs is your dedication for it. Your priority of it. And that might cost saying, I'm not going to answer the phone right now, or I'm not going to spend the morning out walking the dog or walking with my husband or whatever, spending time chit-chatting with your children or whatever else priority you might. That is perhaps a cost.
Oh, Mrs. Eddy, sorry.
No, go ahead.
She talks about, she asked the question in Science and Health, if life without personal friends would be a blank. And then she says, when this happens. She doesn't say if this happens. She says when it happens. And it sort of suggests or implies that it's part of the path is that you may have to sacrifice some friendships or some personal relationships or contacts as you progress.
Absolutely. That's true. She does say if. She says when.
And then that void is already full when it happens. God fills that void better than any person ever could.
And she also designates personal friends, and there's a difference. What is personal friendship?
Versus real friendship.
People who know you to be a certain way, respect that.
Yeah.
It's based on personality.
Yeah.
A lot of times, personal friends expect something in return, and therefore, it's a selfish motive for having this personal sense of friendship with people. I like to be friends with you because it makes me feel good.
It's a relationship that's devoid of God. There's no God in it. Maybe it is a husband controlling the wife, or a mother controlling the child, or it might seem humanly good, but there's no God to it. There's a dependency on them Thou shalt have no other gods before me. Well, my God is my child, or my God is my wife, or my God is something. It's devoid of God. That is what you must give up. And if you give it up willingly, there's a pretty good chance you'll never have to give that person up. But if you hold on to the personal sense of that person, it's going to blow up. Yes, it will.
Because it is unlike God. Life, truth, and love will annihilate.
I have people that have told me, oh, you know, they look back to their mother or their father who are dead, and they just don't quite ever get over it. And I don't have that feeling at all. But, you know, I always feel it's such a wrong way.
It's a very sad thing. You know, people just can't seem to almost continue their life when someone they love has passed on. I'm not saying that that's not extremely a difficult thing. It is, but if...
Up to a point, but at some point one has to...
Right. That's right.
It becomes less important if you have God.
That's
yeah,
it.
At some point you have to stop believing that death ever occurred to anybody else.
Right. You'll see them again.
And you have to grow up and be responsible for yourself and not lean on someone else.
That's right.
You're making
that's the personal sense. If you get rid of that personal sense, you'll find your joy returning and you're just fine. All that affection and all the good that person was came from God. That's where always it should be. God meets your needs. It might seem to come through a person. But if you know this, you'll find your needs being met in other ways. But if you're so focused and make this person a god in your life, you won't even see what God's doing. And you'll shut the door to what God's doing. You'll only do it to yourself.
So if we understand that all the good came from God, then we never really lose anything to mourn over or to go on, you know, pining. Oh, I lost this, or they did this or they did that. The good is still here.
Thank you. That's the exact point. And that is what overcomes grief. So now we're having audience with spirit, which is just the most wonderful thing in the entire universe. And then you're having audience with the divine principle love. And what does that divine principle love do?
Destroy all error.
Yes. So this is prayer. When you do this, you have that audience with spirit, whatever ails you is gonna, it'll be destroyed. Wonderful. Just that one sentence is just incredible. I love it.
And that is the dominion that God gives each one of us. It says so. Beginning of Genesis, God gave man dominion, and that is how we get it.
Thank you. Okay, Sharon, you read citation one, just the first paragraph.
The scriptures imply that God is all in all. From this it follows that nothing possesses reality nor exists except the divine mind and his ideas.
Thank you. I know wrote about this and how, you know, that this is all, that we're all seeking this, to understand this principle. God being all in all, there's nothing else. And Florence also found something amazing on YouTube, which I guess I'll have Gary read. Thank you, Florence.
Entitled, Does Evil Exist? One day a professor of a university decided to defy his pupils. He asked, Did God create everything that exists? A student answered bravely, Yes, he did. Everything? Asked the teacher. Yes, everything, was the answer of the student. In this case, God also created evil, correct? Because evil exists, said the teacher. To that, the student had no answer and remained in silence. The teacher was delighted at the opportunity to prove one more time that faith was only a myth. Suddenly, another student raised his hand and asked, "May I ask you a question, Professor?" "Of course," was the answer. "Does cold exist?" "Of course," answered the professor. "Did you ever feel cold?" "Actually, sir, a cold does not exist. According to studies in physics, cold is the total and complete absence of heat. An object can only be studied if it has and transmits energy, and it is the heat of an object that transmits its energy. Without heat, the objects are inert, incapable to react. But cold does not exist. We created the term cold to explain the lack of heat." "And darkness," continues the student. "It exists," replied the professor. "Again, you're wrong, sir. Darkness is the total absence of light. You can study light and brightness, but not darkness. The prism of Nichols shows the variety of different colors in which the light can be decomposed according to the longitude of the waves. Darkness is the term we created to explain the total absence of light." And finally, the student asked, "And evil, sir? Does evil exist?" "God did not create evil. Evil is the absence of God in people's hearts. It is the absence of love, humanity, and faith. Love and faith are like heat and light. They exist. Their absence leads to evil." Now it was the professor's turn to remain silent. The name of the student was Albert Einstein.
Wasn't that amazing? Thank you, Ron.
It's beautiful, though.
Good old Albert Einstein. You see, he understood.
He understood a lot.
He did.
Yes.
He understood our textbook, which is why he was so impressed with it and Mrs. Eddy. And he was way ahead of his time, as is our textbook. But that doesn't mean that it's not relevant for right now. And the more you do study it, and mainly the more you apply it, you know, that was Parthen's point in "He Shall Know the Truth, and the Truth Shall Make You Free," that begins with something else. If you're my disciple, when you follow me, when you're actually living it, then that truth will make you free. So this time is spent here today to get you to have a greater understanding of God, and how to get that greater understanding of God through prayer and communion with Him. You know, we have had many roundtable discussions, and I remember not that long ago, maybe last year, when every time we had the discussion on God, we talked about a synonym. And anyway, all those roundtables are archived, and you should listen to them, because it's something that doesn't get old or dated if you weren't here at that time. So these topics we discuss, they're endless in their depth.
And timeless.
In
their relevance.
So we will end now with a message from 1902, an article called God Likeness. The whole article, of course, is wonderful, but we only have time to read a few sections of it. I'm Mary Baker Eddy.
St. Paul writes, "Follow peace with all men, and holiness, without which no man shall see the Lord." To attain peace and holiness is to recognize the divine presence and allness. Jesus said, "I am the way." Kindle the watchfires of unselfed love, and they throw a light upon the uncomplaining agony in the life of our Lord. They open the enigmatical seals of the angel, standing in the sun, a glorified spiritual idea of the ever-present God, in whom there is no darkness, but all is light, and man's immortal being, the meek might, sublime patience, wonderful works, and opening not his mouth in self-defense against false witnesses, express the life of God-likeness. O glorious hope, there remaineth a rest for the righteous, a rest in Christ, a peace in love. The thought of it stills complaint. The heaving surf of life's troubled sea foams itself away, and underneath is a deep, settled calm.
Thank you all for joining us today, and I know you'll be with us for a wonderful service coming up. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you.